This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 9th of December, 1952. The title of this lecture is Flows, the Part Force Bears in Clearing. This lecture is 57 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
All right, this is the first hour of the night lecture, December the 9th. In this hour, I'd like to cover something about flows. You have already had some acquaintance with Techniques 80 and Techniques 88. If you haven't, you should have. The book 880 is, as I say, the high tide of the Confederacy on agreeing with the messed universe. It covers flows, it covers dichotomies, it covers how you make energy, and covers all sorts of things. Doesn't cover them to the extreme limit that they can be covered, but they certainly are covered to the level that an auditor should know about them. Now, this book is written as though we knew nothing but this kind of processing. It's written from that viewpoint. And what you should know about flows is that they are of tremendous, unbelievably tremendous concern to your preclear. It's very interesting. He is downscale because he won't go upscale through the flow bands. It would be wonderful if he could suddenly postulate himself at 40. And then ride it. But if he could postulate himself at 40, he would have to postulate himself at 40. And to postulate himself at 40, he would have to suddenly postulate himself outside the messed universe. Bang. Because 40 has potentialities and capabilities, but not geographical location. You couldn't have a 40 who was also even vaguely connected with a body. A 40 wouldn't be connected with a body, not even vaguely. He wouldn't be holding on to anything that looked like an object. He wouldn't have any of these various spatial and possession limitations or necessities or any framework by which to form up a necessity. He could postulate, now I will pretend I need something, but the actuality is that he'd never be able to convince himself that he needed anything. So look at your preclear. Look at your preclear who thinks he needs all sorts of things. And look at your difference between that and 40. Well, the reason your preclear thinks he needs all sorts of things, has something to do with the body, is down at the lower band of the scale, is not that he cannot use ideas. It is simply that he is, you might say, like infantry, pinned down by enemy fire. He's really pinned down in a most adequate sense. He's pinned down by flows. Because he can't handle them himself, he escapes back of them. Now, when I say flows, I am being too narrow in that terminology. I should say ridges, dispersals, all of those things that constitute manifestations of energy, including objects. Now, you might as well say object as say flow. A flow is an object. It's a particle, flow. It's a flow of particles. It has been postulated that something is there and that something is changing. And because there is something there and that something changes, we have. And out of this, you get time. Now, you just postulate that you've got a particle, and then the particle is something else in this space in which you're oriented, and you have an object. There isn't really any difference in the anatomy, except more of it, between a solid object and any bit of energy. The physicist is learning that slowly, that he gets all snarled up every once in a while. It was with great shock that he opened up with cyclotrons and found out that an electrical flow had mass and that an electron had mass. Well, sure, it has mass. How the devil did he think it could change in space if it didn't have mass? This would be the idiocy beyond idiocy, you see, to suppose that there was a whatsis which could exist without a somethingist. It would just be idiotic. Now, you could say an idea that's observable and within experience can exist without relationship to space or energy. There are ideas floating along the track in this culture which are killers. They're just ideas. That's all they are. They're just floating along. And they're not floating along in time. That's because they don't exist in time. They are in agreement with people, and therefore, being in agreement with people, people conceiving that they move in time and have to have, suppose the idea to be in motion, because it's with them in present time, and their havingness in present time is different than the present time which immediately passed. You see how easy that is, then, to conceive that an idea is, has motion in it. Well, an idea contained in a mass of energy and inflicted upon the individual out of a mass of energy and by a mass of energy isn't an idea but an energy pattern being inflicted by energy, a certain pattern of energy hitting the person. Now, this would be what you might call an aberrated idea. All the axioms deal along the line there with Homo sapiens in his view of energy. And Homo sapiens, in viewing energy, views his ideas as an energy form. Every thought is preceded by an effort, it says. I think it's Axiom 121. Every effort, then, will result in some sort of a thought, too, one way or the other. Well, isn't it extremely interesting that a Homo sapiens would be pinned down to that degree? Because he, this is true as far as he's concerned. You take any thought, almost any thought he has, and you can start working with it, and it will turn into an effort. In other words, his thinkingness is at the effort band, and therefore he's having a rather rough time of it. So let's take a look, then, at what thought would be. You'd have thought, then, at one end, existing without energy, and then you would have thought existing with energy. And let's just out of anybody or any being on which energy can make a large effect would be considered to be an aberrated being. So therefore, Axiom 121 becomes correct when we say, I think that's the number, when we say every aberrated thought is preceded by a counter effort. And that's true, because you can run down the track on any aberrated idea a person has and find that idea all wrapped up in energy, for which he's taking no responsibility and which, therefore, has a command value on him. All right, what's the answer to this? Then we have two categories of thought. There's the category of thought which you could call the postulate level. And then you could have a category which would have to do with an evaluation or a supposition or a play-like sort of an idle speculation or a meaningful speculation or anything like that could be with that postulate. And it would be just a little bracket down from the postulate. And that'd be clear up the tone scale, clear up off of 40.0, above that. You could have a postulate, then you could have combinations of things that would add up into postulates and so forth. You could also have sensation up there, because a fellow can postulate a sensation, and he could also postulate that a sensation could exist without energy. There's no limitation up there at that band. Now let's come on down band and find out what thought is, as supposed by Homo sapiens. Thought is something that you'd better think about, because you have to propose and resolve problems relating to survival. You have Homo sapiens as definition of mind. That is a different type of thinking, actually, and a different type of mind, because it plots itself against time. Time has to have a havingness, has to be space and energy to have time, and so, therefore, you have the postulates and evaluations way up here, could exist without time. You could do anything with that because you're integrating and you're multiplying, you're adding into the formula of thinking, you're adding zero. So 1 equals 2 and so on. There isn't any time factors involved in that. We come down tone scale. The mind of Homo sapiens poses and relates problems relating to survival. Then what is the mind at the theta level doing? You could say it's musing itself. You could say it's postulating purpose so that we'll have purpose. But it's not a driven activity. And thought to man on the level that we first had it in Dianetics, that's perfectly correct, that material, by the way. That is man. That's how he thinks, so on. The axioms describe that activity. It is a process which is a driven process. You sit Homo sapiens down and feed him full of food and give him everything which he wants, and you don't pose any problems in his road and so forth. He doesn't stop thinking, but he starts speculating. He starts sort of postulating and fooling around and so forth. He isn't idle. Mentally, what he's still doing, a bridge type of thing. He's trying to think above 40.0, and he's actually existing lower on the scale than that. But if you want a man to think, Homo sapiens to think, take a whip. Get a machine out of repair. Get something intimately related to survival going haywire, and Homo sapiens will think. At the level of Homo sapiens, it is true that necessity is the mother of invention. Above 40.0, there is no necessity. Immediately, that sometimes goes against somebody's grain when they recognize that above 40.0, we don't have this drive of necessity. Then they'd say, well, you wouldn't get anything done. Well, why do you want to get something done? you see, it's man trying to think about 40.0 puts it back into the framework of Homo sapiens. Well, we've got Homo sapiens' framework pretty well nailed down. And you look at that, yeah. So just watch this when you're processing a preclear. Watch him come up scale. He will do more and more of speculation without meshed universe reason. He will do more and more thinking without meshed universe reason. Connected with it. No driven thought. The driven thought starts dropping out and simply postulate level and what ifs and let's play likes start drifting in. And you get more and more of that as you go up scale. Well, this thing would break theoretically and a person would be relatively free of being driven around 24, 25, 26 on the tone scale. Up in that band up there. His space would be so adequate and his needs would be so lacking in needfulness that he could do a great deal of fooling around without getting into very much trouble. Now, there's no necessity to be right. There's no penalty for being wrong. There isn't any hitter, God help us, level of survival going on. We aren't running along at the tick of the clock, and when it gets to be such and such a clock, that's such and such a period of havingness one halves at the dinner table, and when it gets to be next period of havingness one halves, and then one works through the next 48 hours so that one can have, and he works hard, and then he gets some havingness so that he can have. In other words, he's just got lots of this sort of thing. And if he runs into a long period of not haves, why, he gets skinny and he doesn't do so well and they bury him. So you see how this plots as you regulate havingness. You would be regulating the driven characteristic of thought, and havingness is a sort of a driven way of thinking about things. Now, what pins him down? It's just that, just havingness. Now, when you jump this fellow out of his body, give him a theta clear, he is still not adequate in his handling of energy, and he will keep on binging back against the body and still being part of a messed group, and he'll chrome off the walls, so to speak, and fool around and fool around and fool around, unless you recognize where you're going and what you're doing. You're trying to bring him up above the level of driven thought. And it'd be only fair to say that an individual becomes an unaberrated when he ceases to be in the driven thought band. Necessity is the mother of invention. It is also the mother of aberration. When he hasn't a necessity to drive, or when his necessities are so easily fulfilled that you get a complete fluidity about it all, he's gone up above your action band. But don't think that just because he goes up the pole and gets ecstatic and starts spinning like a spinning mouse that he has suddenly achieved this goal. There is the phenomenon known as going up the pole. That's when somebody doesn't even begin to handle energy, but he just suddenly, somehow or other, latches onto about 40.0 and goes out the top and still holds onto the mess body at the bottom, and he's done the incredible thing of making a circle out of all this. He's joined 0.0 up against 40.0, and to listen to the guy and to talk to the guy, you couldn't really tell whether he's ecstatically alive or fatally dead. He's a terrible state of confusion. This is going up the pole. You can get some people with such a terrific drive of inspiration. Sometimes you will get an idea, and this idea will give you a little surge up the pole. You bing zing, you feel real good, and you're happy. Now, you can count on it if you get it while encumbered with all this mess, that this mess is going to reach out, and in 3 hours, or 3 days, or 3 months, or I've never seen one last longer than 3 months. Pull you back right down into the grind. You say, well, I found what that ecstasy was once, but that was quite a while ago. And then I learned that one had to be more practical about things. And there you go. So what's the difference? Well, lend me your ears. Look, driven thought is driven home by energy. And your Thetan, even though you pushed him through a very small knothole, will still have all of his ridges and his various histories and energy patterns connected thereunto him. If you looked at him on a plot, you couldn't even vaguely get him on a plotting board. He is big. These ridges and deposits of energy and so forth go out just ad infinitum. The best way to test this, and this is something you can amuse yourself with sometimes, is start shooting ridges by velocity. Just pick up velocity of flow and start going through the first bands of ridges immediately near the preclear. Then pick up some more velocity. It gives you the formula in ridge running. How to do this? Just extend it further. And get him going through with velocity, this bank, that bank, next bank, next ridge. And all of a sudden, he's saying, you know something? It just goes way on out. Well, out of your miles. That flow just went for miles and miles and miles. He's not at the outermost limit of his own activity, because once upon a time he was pretty big, and he still remembers it out there at that distance. He was big once. And he can still hit those ridges out there. Well, here's this tremendous mass of energy. What are you going to do? Be the complete idiot and electric shock him or something and get this energy off? Well, there isn't any energy manufactured in this messed universe that compares to theta-manufactured energy. And by the way, when I said, would you be idiotic and give him electric shock, something like that, I didn't mean any aspersion against psychiatry. You understand that. I'm in complete propitiation against psychiatry. And I realize that our survival depends completely on getting the medical profession and psychiatry to agree with us, and that we wouldn't be able to survive unless we did that. And after the material we covered this afternoon, this demonstrates completely why we should go around seeking somebody to agree with us. All right, we get this velocity lying way out there, and we find out this fellow's got lots of energy on him. You're not going to take it off artificially. The best way they do it between lives. Here, you can, by the way, find facsimiles on that thing that are 74 trillion years old. Missed universe havingness. That's been around for quite a while. And mind you, this fellow's gone through electronic incidents. He's gone through between lives implants. He's been psychotherapized. He's been stupidificated in any bracket you could think of. And what do you know? The between lives, all they do, you see, instead of trying to erase engrams, they didn't know how to erase any engrams. That's the wonderfulest gimmick you ever saw in your life. There's a little, by the way, you ever see these circular file card things where you lay off one file card at a time on a circle? Well, supposing each one of those file cards had a picture on it were spinning towards you and then spinning away from you. It would certainly look like you were being presented with all the scenery of your life, wouldn't it? I mean, if there were scenes on this sort of thing, you'd see these scenes in front of you, and then they'd go away, and then they'd recede, and you'd say automatically, why, those things are all erased. If you were told that forcefully enough, and if those scenes were general enough, and if those things did look enough like the environment in which you had recently lived, you would say, well, yes, sir, that's it. Look at that stuff. I mean, that's erasing all of my memory of this whole thing. Now, actually, there's a gimmick like that. And on these pictures, oh, you get a pre-clear to run in this, he'd go half screwy. Every once in a while, he gets a Vizio. By the way, you've got to know about this. I'm just not telling you this stuff for sensationalism, although it's very sensational, I suppose. Prefrontal lobotomies aren't, you see. I mean, that's common, that's routine, but this stuff, too sensational. Anyway, every once in a while, you get your pre-clear with a stuck Vizio, and it isn't a Vizio. Very often it's a Vizio that happened to him and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's usually the case, but all of a sudden he's got a Vizio and it's a winter scene. And it doesn't relate to anything he ever saw, and he says, I wonder if this is a past life of mine or what this is. And you process him for a little while and he's got this Vizio back again. And you process him for a little while and he's got this Vizio back again. And it shows a big, it looks something like, it possibly looks... who were those characters that had all the lithographs here on Earth? The Courier and Ives, yeah. I'll have to read up on Earth, get a little more accustomed. Anyway. Anyway, Courier and Ives, snow scene. He'll be sick of it after a while. He's stuck in a between lives wipeout. And it's one that fell this way and he can't bring himself to believe that it wiped out because it connected up with some valuable snow scene memory in his last life. And when this thing came up, why, it suddenly clicked past, and he looked at it, and he says, oh, gee, that sure reminds me of Bessie. And he's got it right there. It's in balance. It, like a mock-up, you see. The mock-up will often lock up when it strikes too close to a messed universe actuality. If you're having lots of trouble with some mock-up sometimes, it might not be your pre-clear's ability at all. It's just you've insisted on mocking up his mother when you should have been mocking up something that had a pumpkin for a head, you see? I mean, he couldn't handle this mock-up. And the reason he couldn't is every time he starts to handle the mock-up, he begins to think it's his own facsimile. And then he doesn't know whether he's handling the facsimile of mother or a mock-up of mother. And if he can't make up his mind about those, you've locked him up in a maybe. When you've got him all messed up in this maybe, then, of course, he's in an uncertainty and a state of uncertainty and unbeingness are the same state. So he can't handle a mock-up. Just making sure that he turned that facsimile enough colors and enough idiocies in it or enough changes in it until he's completely sure that it's his facsimile, his own creation, pardon me, and that it is not a real universe facsimile. All right, this stuff going by under his nose, clickety, 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 click, and he's in between lies there, and he's sitting there, and then all of a sudden the whole thing goes whirr, and he sits over to the right of it, and he says, what do you know, my life disappeared. Then it goes whirr, and he's sitting over to the left of it, and he says, what do you know, my life disappeared. Well, you know those between lives implants are in, and sometimes he's been turned this way, and sometimes he's been whirred the other way, and sometimes they've been fed in that way. because he didn't care which end was up, you see. And the silly implants, he starts shifting, and he'll suddenly get views of himself over here, and you'll run into this when you start creating mock-ups with him, something like that. He'll occasionally sort of get an odd idea of views of himself in clothes that he didn't have any idea of at all. And he'll say, you're out of your body, and he's looking at this thing, and he isn't sure what's happening. Oh, this is very fascinating. It also tells you something else. Those pictures on that file card machine are usually within a half a century of the knockout.
Somebody was around with a camera, folks.
And then he conceives his life to be wiped out, and he's a new being, and it's very astonishing. This guy claims he can't remember anything about his past life, and you strain and sweat over this thing, do mock-ups of little spinning wheels like this, and llama prayer wheels, and tie pictures on them, and do other things with it, and he's liable to get a horrible feeling in his head suddenly, and all of a sudden say, I wonder whatever did happen to my classmate Joe. And you say, you're... University, huh? No, this was, this is the good old Space Academy. And you say, when was this? And he, I don't know compared to present time. I just happen to think of Joe, that's all. He's a good friend of mine. I wonder where Joe is. And you meet her, and he starts thinking this sort, and he said, gee, you know, that was over 1,000,000 years ago. He's hit some sort of a between lives wipeout, in other words, and it's wiped on. Bong! And he's got that life and this life then. Incredibly enough, it will spark up a person's memory, just snap, if you run one of these things. Well, what do you know? Even that kind of treatment, or even the kind of treatment of sitting him in the chair and just, by the way, there's waves there. Flows hit him when he's in that position. He is swept into this place with flows. He's pinned down with flows. He's gone away from there with flows. He shot back here again with flows. It's very interesting, I mean, the way they use flows. And not all of that, not even things like hitting a fellow with mega volts and so on, wipe out these ridges. You'll find all this stuff on these ridges. It's fabulous. Man, every man is carrying a very complete history of himself, with the thing sufficiently messed up because of the agree and have, and when I want, I can't have, and when I can't have, I want, and that sort of thing interplaying, blocking these things out. He's got a complete history of himself. It's a completely unimportant history of himself. You don't care anything about that history of himself. It's just his identity in the messed universe, and it isn't even very adventurous, and it's the sensation on it's kind of poor. There's better stuff earlier, but those ridges are sitting here, and those ridges are sitting out there 5 feet, and they're sitting out there 30 feet, and on in. And his history of the messed universe is sitting on these ridges. These big ridges are held up in front of him. He actually has something on matrixes. There's actually a network up here, and there's the one type of facsimiles on one side of it and another type of facsimiles on the other side of the thing. The fellow's built himself up a beautiful energy scheme. Here it sits. And nothing has wiped it out. Sometimes somebody will blow one, or explode one, or change the position of one, or cave in one of these ridges on the fellow, or something like that will happen. But the destruction, as compared to the bulk of material present, is minimal. Something like scratching a fender on your car. Nothing to it. Well, what do you suppose? You don't think, then, that you're suddenly going to get this preclear to postulate that he's at 40.0 without going through the steps of him being able to handle energy, do you, and having be clear and stay that way? No, sir. Because as till he can learn to handle force completely and utterly, he is unable to handle these ridges. And if he could handle force completely and utterly, he could blow this whole shooting match. And then and there, and only then and there, would these things cease to have the effect upon him of command and necessity and demand thinking. Then his mind's free. We're actually doing the same thing we were trying to do in book one. We're trying to wipe out this energy, which has messages on it, which gets enforced by physical pain, Only the physical pain is, turns out to be an electronic type flow. We're still trying to do the same thing. We just understand it better, and it's a lot fancier. And the process is a lot simpler. But the end goal on it is the same thing. And that's, let's knock out every single cockeyed engram this guy's got. You want experiences? The time to have experience is now and will have, not did have. An experience that you did have is no good to you. Really isn't even good data. You could probably sit down and figure out better data. What's it appertain to? It appertains to you. So you dig up the past life experience. Now you know how to make iron in Upper Bavaria. That's great. It's just what you needed. I had one pre-clear, and all of a sudden he's sitting in the chair and he started to go this way. I thought, for heaven's sakes. I said, what do you know? See, he said, I spoke very good sign language. Very good sign language. He's born in New York City. This guy, I don't know how he ever wandered east again, I guess on the prevailing westerly winds. But he had spoken excellent sign language back there about the middle of the 18th and the beginning of the 19th century. And he'd all of a sudden recovered his total bank of sign language. Oh, isn't that fascinating? That's great. I mean, that's just what he needed. A communication system that's as dead as the leaves of yesterday. Or I guess it'd be interesting. You could have Hopalong Cassidy take three or four of the signs and do them in a movie. But they've got a book on it. The book's wrong, but they've got a book on it. That's very funny, by the way. The guy really did know sign language, and he was from Lower East Side, New York. I know something about sign language. Very fascinating, all of a sudden, see him waving his hand around and going through, may the sun shine brightly in your eyes, and so on. But anyhow, data. Data is of very little good to you. You can pervade and approximate and get data faster than you can remember it. You want to know all about a machine? Just look at the machine and own it for a minute. And you'll be all through the machine suddenly, pervade it. And you all of a sudden say, all the working parts of the machine. Now you want to really inspect this machine and take it apart? Why worry about messed? Go out here. You've got a mock-up of it, now take the mock-up apart and look it over. Isn't that interesting? That's the way that thing spells, on the principle of hydrogenation. Must have been designed by the U.S. Forestry Service or something. That's right. And, you know, very little practice, very small amount of practice. You could take practically any piece of machinery and without reading its label, once you know how to do this, you can tell people where and when it was manufactured. And if you're real good, you can tell them the name of the chief mechanic that built it. I mean, the data is there to that minute detail. You know that you can read a book that you know not the language of and never knew the language of simply by reading the meaning that the last person that read it put on it? Sounds silly, doesn't it? But it's true. You just don't read the letters, just read the depth of the energy deposit of the... And by the way, what you mostly get is the disagreement the fellow had with the book. Now, those all sound wild and incredible. You'll be doing them one of these days. A lot of you can do them now, and you won't think anything about it at all. It'll be routine. But don't try to tell anybody. And don't let your pre-clear tell you at any moment that all he has to do is simply rise to the high and beautiful plane of pure thought without anything ever having any effect on him again in the line of energy. Bull. He's got to be able to handle that energy, otherwise the energy can command him. And that's the trick of this universe, is you command the energy or it commands you. If you want to command this universe, it is a universe of space and energy. And if you want to command it, you've got to be able to command space and energy. A universe of your own might also come down to a manufacturer by space and energy. It might do that. Doesn't have to, But if it did, you'd certainly better know how to control space energy. And if you made a universe of your own and you made it just like no energy in it, no space, you didn't go by those things, or you had 88-dimensional space or some darn fool thing, boy, you'd better know how to handle energy. Someday somebody will show up and he's got a new gimmick on the subject of energy. He'll take a look at this nice universe you've got there and pick up the agreement level, and he'll say, well, here we go. I think that I like this. I'll have it. And you say, you know, there's a funny thing, but back in the meshed universe, we had a habit system by which that person who had to have something always found it disagreeing with me. Pow! Discourage him in it. All right. Therefore, I hope you get this much more clearly on why energy stands as a barrier, the sinister barrier, between aberrated thought and being free to do anything you please with thought. Now, it's an easy barrier to cross, extremely easy to cross, as long as you actually cross it. You can cross it in a mock-up. And you get way upscale, and you don't realize you've gotten this far upscale. And one night you're walking home, and you're sort of, you haven't any thought, really, on the subject of this universe or anything. You've just been going along. Maybe at the same time been holding out a job, something of the sort, and going through routine motions. And you've just been carrying forward mock-ups, and you're just doing your job and processing, maybe processing some people now and then. You say, well, when I was a little boy, I used to have a dog, and so on. I bet I could think of a much cuter dog than that as you're walking home. And so you just mock up this dog, and all of a sudden this great big dog from lives in the neighborhood comes out, and he goes brrr, and your dog jumps on him and tears his throat out. You have two choices at that point. You either just go out and by a system of mock-ups or something or other, why mock out of existence this particular end of things that you're fooling with, or you mock it into existence or something of the sort. What's the use of working? You just mock up a plant and put it all on automatic and then blow it up or something. By the way, if you know if you were to do that, you'd be in a heck of a lot of trouble. Do you know that if you went out here on the marshes someplace and bought a piece of land and mocked up a plant complete and then blew it up, do you know that you'd be arrested for willful destruction of property? The motto of this universe is we must have, and if we have, we're going to keep right on having. And the more you have, the more we gotcha. All right. Your other choice is, of course, is just to stop right there on the corner and manufacture a little space and put a pink cloud in the middle of it and sit down and think the whole thing over. All right. The bridge must lead then across energy, and the abyss is the abyss of force. Now, we talked about a bridge and about a chasm and the abyss. The mystics talk about the abyss, so on through the past. What is the abyss? What are you trying to bridge? Well, you're trying to bridge very clearly the necessity of energy. And you're not going to do it by saying, I don't want anything to do with energy. And I'm going to deny myself a body. And I'm going to deny myself sensation. And I'm going to not use this. And I'm not going to do that. And I'm going to back off from this whole thing, and just to show this universe what's happening and that I'm boss, I'm going to sit right here on these spikes. And I'm going to sit on these spikes and hold this arm in this position for 30 years. That'll show them. And what do you know? 30 years later, you're still there. They prove that conclusively. When they sit on spikes for 30 years, they prove that they are still there at the end of 30 years. Well, it's a good experiment, but it shouldn't be carried out so often. Now, the fact of the case, then, is that you have to not necessarily partake of action or really even engage in action, but you've certainly got to be willing to handle action. You know, if you were to make, this is an experiment, this is one you can reach because it's an action postulate. If you were to just suddenly make the statement to yourself, I'm going to use this body for everything it's possibly good for. I don't care whether I wear it out or not. I'm going to get everything out of it that can be gotten out of it. I'm going to make it do anything a body can do, and I'm going to use it with the wildest abandon possible. I'm going to feed it all the good food I can possibly do. I am going to engage in the most horrendous affairs that anybody ever engaged in since Don Juan. I'm going to put this body in a car and drive it faster than it's ever been driven before. I'm going to teach this body in order to do this and do that, and I'm going to rig it up with titles, and I'm going to do all of these things with this body, and there's nothing going to stop me doing these things with this body. All of a sudden, the darnest little surge will go through you. You just consented to the first step on the road, and that is to use it. Up to that time, you may never have recognized one thing, that you've never used it. You've taken care of it. You know, the fellow who spends all of his life trying to get a costume in which to play the part, about the time he gets the costume, gets buried. Grimly enough, we spend all of our time getting dressed for the play and then no play. At first, you just got to have the object so that you can have the action. Then after that, the object becomes the object. It's an odd thing that in English, beautiful stuff language, we have the word object as meaning goal. Yes, sir. We also have the word identity, and we also have identification. And it means it's exactly what it says. An identity is the bottom scale. That's a little trick. It demonstrates people that somebody was very clever doing this, and that avoids saying we've been very clever in undoing the riddle. Because, of course, the word identity means that. Because what are we doing? We're tracking agreement. And what is language? Language is the communications of agreements and disagreements. That's all. Of course, that language sits together that way. Wouldn't sit together otherwise. If there's a single word in English now that does not mean what it's not supposed to mean, why, it's because something has been entered on an arbitrary reason, like transcendentalism. Or something of the sort. But even then, the fellow had enough sense to have the name Kant. All right. In other words, you are essentially, at the level you pick up a preclear, or the preclear is essentially energy. That's a low level. But boy, he's got to be that low level. When you get him out of a body and you get his energy all developed and he's all set and he's roaring to go and he's practically a ball of fire, why, what do you know? He's going to have to be perfectly willing to use that energy in any department. Willing to. It's not necessary that he does, but he's got to be willing to. He'd have to be able to use that energy to deliver somebody a zap, for instance. What you playfully used to do called a nip. You take two energy beams and you slap them together just back of a guy's ears. Kills him. It's an easy way to break a thetan out, though. So he should be willing to do that. Why? So he could reassure himself, not advising you to have anybody do this, but he'd have to do something along in that order, at least go down here and knock out a couple of big neon signs or something of this sort, or plug himself into the main power lines and short them out. To do what? To show that all he has to do is change a postulate and he keep right on going, because he's arduously learned that when he uses his energy, he starts failing in this universe. Well, you see, you've got a new system. You can use all the energy you want to. All you have to do is run out any evil effect that you had from it, or simply learn how to sidestep the backflash. You can either receive the backflash or let the backflash go through. You get so split second in your timing that you can put out an energy beam and then its backflash doesn't find anything there to go through. Nice trick, sir. It'd be like firing a rifle and then not being there to get any recoil. Or you simply change the posture and make a mock-up or run it out right away. The guy simply, he knocks down the Edison Company sign and short-circuits the whole joint and blows all the main fuses in Philadelphia. Well, have him sit down and run it out, you see? That's what's important. And that's just being able to handle energy on a snap-bang basis. But you've got a method of doing it. Why did the handling of energy get you into trouble? And how could energy then assume this much control and command over a person? And why did these flows and dispersals become so terribly important to him? Well, the reason they did is because they kept heading him down scale. And he finally got into the bracket where energy meant nothing else but these diagrams which you had this afternoon, last few lectures. Now, it said simply and positively that every one of those diagrams made the handling of flow as the complete modus operandi of existence about the most horrible thing that you could do. Just terrible. But you have a new way of handling it. As a matter of fact, if you want people to agree with you, outflow at them. Say, simple. Just outflow good and hard. And if this fellow doesn't agree and you've blown up in his face, so to speak, you've got this fellow and he hasn't agreed with you, and you're going to sell him this property, you're going to reduce his survival by making him acquire something, why, just start giving him hell. That's all, and just give him some more, and give him some more, and he gets all ready to fight, then start making noises like you're exploding. Anything like that, and the first thing you know, you'll say yes, he'll do it. Providing you've got enough strength. Force, of course. And of course, if you want somebody to want you, you keep walking away. Just keep walking the opposite direction, and you get somebody all balled up on this one. Terrible. I mean, it's horrible. The ease with which you can use those flows and monitor interpersonal relationships. But that's a monitor from a let's pretend basis. Couldn't possibly be serious to you if you're doing anything like that. You wouldn't be doing anything to anybody to louse them up, really, if you were at that band. You might amuse yourself or amuse your friends or amuse them. There wouldn't be very much viciousness in it. Now, what are we trying to get then? We're really only trying to get this bank that goes out to darn near infinity, which has more engrams on it than you could possibly count. You could sit down for the next 50 years and just count them one by one as fast as you could count, and you wouldn't be able to count all the facsimiles on these ridges. Much less run them out. We were interested before in making the best Homo sapiens that we possibly could make. Okay. We one goal. That's attainable. That can be achieved. It gets up to about 4.0, 5.0. That's all. You can do that by running out the most horrible things with overt action motivators and so on, even by old-time engrams. What are you going to do now? You got another goal. You're trying to make the clearest Satan you possibly can make. So you're dealing with a new subject, to a new goal, to a new thought level. And that one leads up through not becoming a well-mannered, if somewhat indifferent, able to handle what comes up, not lose one's head in emergency, be skilled at what one is doing, Homo sapiens. This requires a perfect, I mean, this guy that you're trying to make, get up tone scale up here. He's got to be a killer. He has to be able to handle unlimited force. Don't think for a moment that you're ever going to escape it. If he can handle unlimited force, you see what's the matter out there? When you get out here to ring 99,000, you actually have, in man, you have a miniature of a complex electron. And in those ridges and so forth, you might as well call the Dayton himself the proton, and those other things out there, you might as well call them electron, neutron orbits. And sure enough, a neutron, electron orbit and so forth looks just about like a ridge. You see, an electron orbit isn't a little thing in pink pants or something that is racing around, like racing around this proton. the way they'd like you have you believe in the elementary physics textbook. They change their minds by the time they get up to the advanced physics textbook, and then they change their mind again when they get up to really advanced physics, super advanced physics, and then when you get into elementary nuclear phenomena, boy, they've changed their minds so many times nobody knows what the heck cooks. And after you've been on a project for a while and you really had to work with them, the best thing you can figure out probably is it probably looks like an onion. Now, you have an embryonic, not embryonic, but you have in a pattern form. You don't really have a solar system, that is to say a sun and a whole bunch of planets flowing around the sun, any more than you have that in nuclear physics. It's more like an asteroid belt. If you could figure a solid asteroid belt at every planetary belt, you'd be getting to get in somewhere close to it. And then if Earth had the solid belts that went out as far as Arcturus, you'd get some kind of an idea, many light years away, you get some kind of an idea of what complexity you have here, operation. Now, although apparently these rings are responsible for the production of energy, the gimmick is that they're not. What's responsible for the production of energy is not an interlocking flow from this, it's strictly a postulate. You say, let there be light. Whap. Now you can build all this complex structure. It's something like an engineer would sit down and he would build a little gimmick that was to do everything that was to be done with this particular machine. And he would build this little tiny gimmick, and all you had to do with this gimmick was simply connect it and it would do everything. And then he sits down and he says, now let me see. And he starts building tubes and wires and modulators to unmodulate what he has just modulated, and condensers to uncondense what he has just condensed, and rectifiers and all sorts of inducers and transducers and perspirators and and he keeps adding these things onto his circuit and adding them onto his circuit and adding them onto his circuit until he's one day. By the way, did you ever see a Wright whirlwind engine? That's really a gorgeous engine. It puts jets in to furnish heat, and then it's got vanes to take the heat away in the slipstream. And it just works on that principle. You work like heck to make all this heat, and then you work like heck to cool it all down. And then you've got parts that go on beyond that base, and they heat up, and they cool down, and they heat up, and they cool down. When you finally get through, you have a very wonderful aircraft engine, as far as messed engines go, but it looks very silly. It looks like the piece of mechanical buffoonery they have in bathrooms and call flesh boxes. You ever try to fix one of those things? But it's wonderful. There's little rods that push up levers so that other levers will close and so on. And they came along with a jet engine, and this jet engine has still got more on it than a jet engine should have, but it's getting simpler and simpler and simpler. Every once in a while, some engineer gets a brand new idea, and this idea mainly consists of suddenly jumping onto this engine and tearing out a whole bunch of parts and throwing them away and then hooking everything in straight. Then he stands back real proudly, and actually he has made a considerable advance in the engine. Until the next engineer comes along, he's going to make a big advance in this engine, and he tears off a whole block more parts and he throws those things away and the thing flies better. And then one day somebody comes along and he tears all the cylinders off, and he tears all the cooling systems off, and he tears the gas tanks out, and he tears everything out on the whole thing, and he says, well, let's see, let's put this propeller hub on here. Okay, got this propeller. Be a son of a gun if it doesn't run like mad. That would be a postulate work. Actually, well, there isn't any reason why you couldn't do that. It reduces down to that. The more messed you hang on something, the more messed you've got to hang on something in order to undo what some of the messed is doing. And it can really get complicated after a while. Well, a fellow's ridges have gotten into that shape. He's got pluses that cancel minuses, and he's got thises that cancel thatis. And the final result is he is so solid that he does not produce energy anymore. Because the way he produced energy is you take this propeller off the hub, and you throw the hub away, and the plane really starts flying. And he merely says, let there be light, bang. That sounds odd to you. And if it wasn't for this silly system of we've got to plant it so that we can perceive it, it wouldn't be possible, because you see all the time it isn't there. But it sure looks like it's there when you're down at one end of the tone scale and something comes along and guns one of these ridges into an explosion. You suddenly get this creepy feeling that such and so is about to happen. Well, there's wavelengths on those ridges that Homo sapiens is too low on the tone scale to touch. And therefore, he's got to be way up tone scale in terms of energy. He's got to go way up tone scale, way up in terms of energy to run out the high-level ridges. The reason why your childhood lies forgotten is this. It has a faster speed than adulthood, and you don't pick up the same waves. It's going too fast. If you just would readjust and just run for a minute, just fast as a child, and say, I'll feel like a child, sing, sing, more scenes that clip through about your childhood than you could count. That's why childhood blanks out. That's why the whole track blanks out. And that's why you have to come way upscale in the ability to handle energy to clean up all those ridges and be into a position where you can really get down to work using postulates or using energy. You found out all there is to know about energy. Actually, you come to the last port of call on the subject of energy. Now you got to track back. It's like a game, Parcheesi, or something of the sort. Let's take a break.